Welcome back, listeners, to part two of our interview with Eugene Moy, Vice President of the Chinese Historical Society of SoCal and longtime activist of Chinatown. I am Caleb, again joined with fellow oral history members Malia, Ji Hao, and Zhang Yong, and let's get right into it.
I mentioned earlier about my aunt and uncle coming here in the 1970s, and part of the reason was because the immigration quotas were increased in 1965. So even though Chinese exclusion was in place from 1882 to 1943, when exclusion was repealed in 43, there was still a quota system in place, and that could only allow 105 people per year into this country from all sources, all internationally. So let's say you're Chinese from Australia, or Chinese from Canada, or Chinese from the other places, you were counted in that 105 per year. So there was very little impact as a result of exclusion being repealed. It wasn't until 1965 that a new Immigration and Naturalization Act was passed, and the quotas were increased to 20,000 per year. Almost near the end of the Vietnam War, there were refugee acts that were passed, and that enabled people coming from Vietnam and Cambodia to arrive. That really changed the demographics, the balance of Asian and Chinese population here. You know, my dialect is Toisan from Guangdong, and that's only a small part of Guangdong. Now, the majority probably in Chinatown will speak Mandarin, let's say, or Chochu, Tichu dialect from Southeast Asia. We're slowly becoming a minority, even though the family associations which spoke Cantonese are still around. Because of that high-level organization, we actually have had a distinctive community, a Chinatown community. I mentioned earlier I belong to the CACA. Maybe only two or three of the members live in Chinatown. You know, hundreds of others live outside of the community. But we come here because this was our home base. This was where everything got started. So if you are a Li, you belong to the Li Family Association, you won't go to the Wong Family Association or Jihao Okten, you belong to these organizations because your parents and your grandparents and that were part of that. So my grandfather, my mother's side, and two of his brothers lived in an SRO that was above Little Joe's Italian American Restaurant on the corner of Broadway and College. Little Joe's had to take down the upper floors after 1971. The earthquake resulted in structural damage. So by that time, my grandfather had already passed. But a lot of the people who worked in the community, the blue-collar working people, the cooks and the people who worked in the garment shops, a lot of people lived in these SROs. As you know, there's still quite a few SROs around today. It's unique to Chinatown that in many urban areas, single-room occupancy hotels have been the way that a lot of people would live. Let's say you are working in a coal mine, or you're working in a steel mill. You know, you come from the countryside, you come from some small town, you come into town and you say, well, you know, the cheapest form of living is, yeah, and it's an SRO. And, you know, especially back in the day when I was mostly men, you know, that's okay. That's not a big problem for a single man. Today, for health and safety reasons, you know, we know that it's not always the best kind of environment for a person to live in one room. So my grandfather and his number three brother, we call Sam Gong, they lived in one room. All they had was a hot plate to heat up and cook with, but there down the hall was a kitchen. There's probably 30 or 40 units or more, actually, because probably 50 or 60 altogether. Anyway, well, that building had its upper floors taken down after the 71 earthquake as a result of a lot of pressure. There is now some affordable housing on the site. The developer did not want to provide any affordable housing out of the 250 units they have. But ultimately, 53 affordable units were adopted. And of course, when the building was finished, those 53 affordable units, there were thousands of applications for those. Yeah. They were the first to be sold, to be rented out.
Maybe just like a follow-up question to that, like, you know, like a lot of Chinese move here, a lot of immigrants move here. Can you just tell us like specific like reasons people, we always talk about the American dream, like what might be the American dream for those like people moving here beside the quota increase? Like maybe they talk about the economic factors, the political factors, and all kinds of stuff that like lead them to come to the United States.
You generally don't come to the United States on your own and just buy a plane ticket and say, well, I'm going to go there. You sort of know that there is some sort of support system that, or there's a job. One of the reasons why Chinatowns have all of these associations, the family and district associations, was they actually provided the means for people to emigrate. If Mr. Lee had a grocery store and there's a farmer out there in San Bernardino who needs 100 guys to pick oranges, come to Mr. Lee in Chinatown and say, hey, you know, can you get me 50 guys to, and so Mr. Lee would go to his association and say, oh yeah, my association has all these contacts in the village back home. So the association would pay for the boat tickets and pay for housing and help for, you know, until they could get everything repaid, or they would loan money. They would function as a bank. The Lee Association here, by the way, has a federal credit union. I don't know if you know that. So if you went to Boston or San Francisco or Seattle, you would go to the Lee Association and have basically what amounts to an ATM. You know, you go get some money. So, you know, the people had to organize, and in order to really survive in society, you need to work together with people, you know, whether it's your own people, cities, whether it's the Jewish community or the German community or the French community. They actually all created organizations that would help each other. The French Benevolent Society decided they needed a hospital. So in 1869, the hospital, French hospital, was built. And in San Francisco, there's a Chinese hospital organized. We didn't have to have a Chinese hospital because the French hospital functioned in that way because there were Chinese doctors who were working there. It was a good place because it had a culturally relevant food that you could, you know, order, and they had nursing people and doctors who were Chinese. So wherever our communities go, I think it's just necessary that people have to organize and help each other. That's how people have been successful. I mean, you would like to think that you as an individual have the genius and the ability to, and the determination to be successful, but very few of us operate in a vacuum.
You mentioned earlier about like how most people, like when they come over from like emigrating, like, you know, they don't have like much money, and they often settle for like low-income jobs, become blue-collar workers, and they often have to like live in an SRO, right? So I wanted to ask, so what are like the history of SROs, especially like in Chinatown?
That whole phenomenon, all I knew was that when I was young, you know, we would come up and see grandfather and his unit above Little Joe's. And we'd actually give him his social security check. You know, he would get like $50 a month or something like that. And he didn't know how to write. So he would just put an X on his check. That's the challenge that a lot of times our immigrant communities have, is they're not necessarily well-educated. I mentioned in 1965, the immigration quotas were lifted. That was when a lot of people started coming in here, and Chinatown became actually overcrowded. But it also contributed to a fairly busy economic situation, too. There were a lot of sewing factories, actually, so a lot of garment shops in Chinatown in the 1970s and 1980s. And they were all busy because the new immigrants could go to work there without a lot of language skills, and you could just go there and you can bring your child with you. And so sometimes, you know, you could see in the look in the open door and there would be little kids, you know, or babies in the garment shops. And so for many women, while certainly there were abuses in these garment shops and, you know, like in any kind of employment situation, there were good ones and there were bad ones, it actually provided an avenue for many people to move on up. It provided them the opportunity. Similar thing with our swap meets, our indoor merchandising centers like Dynasty Center. And we haven't talked about that, the fact that the biggest one have already been pushed out, you know, like the the shops was torn down and now there's a 6-story building there. Well, the same developer who built that has bought the Dynasty Center. Yeah, Red Car. Yeah. I've met the owner. You know, he's actually Croatian family background. He's third generation Croatian. He's actually an elder in St. Anthony's Croatian Church. He doesn't seem like a bad guy, you know, but it's about business too. Hopefully we'll be able to have more dialogue and maybe work with him on a
cooperative relationship.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you have to acknowledge the fact that some industries and some of the economy, a maturation cycle, you know, a cycle, a time when they, you know, it's really played out. So at least for this community, garment shops helped a lot of people when there was a lot of immigration here. But now as we have had less immigration here, we haven't needed the garment shops here. The center of the garment industry has moved to another location. And then there's a whole new group of people who are working in those shops. So how can we deal with rising rents? How can we deal with a population that's coming in here? Somebody who pays $3,000 or $4,000 a month in rent can eat out all the time. And the reason why we see the continuing success of some of our higher end, you know, some, you know, whether it's Little Jewel selling $18 sandwiches or Wax Paper or others, the average plate even at the Chinese restaurants is increasing. A bowl of pho is $10 to $12, whereas I remember when it was like $4.99, and that was great. You know, where do you guys see yourselves? You know, do you hope to become a permanent San Marino?
I never think about that, like for the future, like where I want to settle in. But like for this work with CZ, it was like introduced by my world history teacher and also the ASV advisor. So at that time, I wasn't aware of different issues is happening in Chinatown. And CCED was basically the first place I discovered what is happening, like what's happening in Cafe Manor, what's happening in Hillside Villa, and what's happening in all around our community, like Oiwa, like got pushed out. Like why was that the case? Like got to talk to a lot of organizers in the community, and also got to talk to a lot of activists that like I never get the experience to talk with when I was back in China, because I moved here 4 years ago. So it was a very transformative like experience for me. Get to know all these people and get inspiration from them. So support them because of how they support the community, the way they organize the tenants, their ideology also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you have a goal of a fair and just society, it sounds like.
I think so, yeah.
And is there something in your background then that you, and this is to all of you, everyone, you know, why would you support the work of CTED? Would you not want to see some nice high rises here, or would you?
So I got involved in this project through Zhang Yang. He introduced me like around a year ago or not even a year ago, like in like September of 2022 to like Chinatown Teen Council. And then like quickly he told me about this project and like I joined and now like we're here, right? But so I've learned in like the last year about gentrification and like the struggles of the residents of Chinatown Faith through like the grocery distributions. Like I've seen the way they live and like with the walking tours with like you or CCED, like the history of Chinatown and like what they actually are like senior residents go through. And I just think that, sure, maybe like the Jiao apartments or like Boston Plaza, they like may like look good, you know, they may bring like economic development to the area, but they're doing it at a price, right? And like it affects our senior residents. And I think that while it may be like you can't always have like a progress without like the negative downsides, I think that the way that people go about it through like gentrifying and like kicking out our like senior residents and like our old restaurants, that's not the way to do it. I want to like see if there's, I personally want to make a different way of like improving Chinatown, I guess would be a way to put it.
What would an improved Chinatown look like to you?
Like Chinatown, it was originally a place where Chinese immigrants who were often like discriminated against like in the 1800s and like 1900s, they would like come together to form Chinatown as a place where they can like feel home, right? And so I want to keep that element, you know, maybe, I don't know, I haven't really like thought about it too hard, huh? But I just want a home for people, you know?
Yeah, I think that was the key for a lot of immigrants coming into Chinatown and stay here, despite all like the changes we have seen like throughout the years. Like, we got IUR like got shut down, and then we got like so many new developments. Like food got like increased a lot. A lot of people saying that like China become like an extension of downtown because of how different like fancy stores being like operated in Chinatown, and a lot of local businesses got pushed out. But we still see a lot of people want to stay here despite the increased rent, despite all these like negative impact on them, because they feel like this is their home. Like even my grandparents who live here, like they go to play Tai Chi with their friends. I think like they found a sense of community here. And that sense of community is like something that I don't think you can find like elsewhere.
We want to recreate a community where people could speak their own dialect freely and with no language barrier. And we want to sell our own cultural food to offer seniors.
Do you shop for groceries in Chinatown?
I don't live in Chinatown.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't live in Chinatown, but we buy some things here.
Mm. Oh, true. Yeah. Like the envelope, I will buy some like Chinese celebration thing from here.
Right, right. So my wife will make the vegetarian dish for New Year's, and she likes the dried oysters. And oftentimes, you know, when you go to the supermarkets, 99 Ranch Market, you know, they're not that good, or they're kind of old. We go to, there's a place called Tin Bo on Broadway next to Hot Wu Restaurant. Tin Bo is an herb store. In the back, in the refrigerator, they have really freshly dried oysters, if that makes sense. You know, they're dried, but they're chilled, they're cool. So they're the best ones because, you know, if you want to make the jia, the vegetarian dish for New Year's, the Buddhist feast, so those oysters are really the best. And I think this is what my vision for Chinatown is, that it's a place that is home, that it's family, you know, it's neighbors, people you know, people you can talk to. You walk in, say hello, you know. I go to Giggles on Broadway. You know, the owner there, Mike, maybe he doesn't have the best all around, but he always has a good amount of things. You know, I like rare and tendon, you know, so he always puts in a lot of tendon, and you know. Because you can talk to him, you know, you walk in and say, hey, you know, hello, Mike, how was your day? And he'll always complain and say, well, you know, because he got a raw deal. You know, his building has been bought by a developer, you know, by Tom Gilmore. Tom Gilmore bought the whole property. And he's the guy who bought the Iowa property, too. He also bought 411 Garage on College Street. He's got 3 years left on his lease, but his building's been bought by a developer. that his neighboring business, the pharmacy on at the corner of College and Broadway, has closed because their lease expired. So we don't know what that developer has
in store,
what his plans are. You know, we think he wants to do a hotel.
So a hotel?
Yeah. Yeah. Good or bad, you know. Some associations here locally wanted to have a hotel, more hotel rooms, because when they have their conventions, or say you're visiting San Francisco or Boston and you want to go to the Lee Family Association over there and for their big meeting, you have hotels in Chinatown across from Alvarez Street.
So there's another major issue that I want to point out is after gentrification, the seniors, I often see seniors just to all the way to Alhambra just to buy groceries. And they often will buy a little car with them. And in your opinion, how would you think the long-term transportation affect the health of seniors as they would like kind of risk their lives to just to buy groceries to maybe like have a high chance to got affected by COVID-19 and other pay events?
I'm in favor of free transportation for everyone. There are so many barriers. I ride the Dash bus because it's free. I really love that the buses actually stop in front of the Historical Society, but it goes to Union Station, it goes to downtown, it goes to other areas, and you can connect from, you know, the B line to the D line, you know, and it's all free. When you go in the metro bus, you know, you have different prices, and you have to buy the card, and you have to refill the card. We should have ways for seniors and other people, low-income people, to have access. Access means having no transportation barriers. So I think that the pricing has been an obstacle. It's not so much the distance, but I think it would be beneficial for us to be able to get to our doctors, for healthcare, for food, and for family, you know. But by the way, did Lynn tell you about her incident with the senior at the...
I think some guy was like harassing an old Asian man.
From Cathay Manor, and Lynn lives across the street. But apparently she saw this trans, you know, apparently a guy dressed as a woman, punched the old Asian man and then knock him down. She raised her voice and took video of it. But then that guy ended up chasing her and she ran into traffic. Unfortunately, there were some sheriff's deputies in that traffic who were able to apprehend this guy. But the old man didn't want to press charges, and I told them, you know, we need to educate some of these folks here. They need to report crimes. Otherwise, the LAPD is not going to allocate enough resources to the area. You know, they'll think, oh, well, Chinatown's a safe area. There aren't any problems. This is something that we have to do to develop a relationship with the seniors and have them trust us. This is a lot of what it means to be in a neighborhood and being a neighbor in a community or being in our home community, to have people all trust each other. Maybe something that we can do is to have a little workshop or seminar. Maybe you guys can do it. And just show the folks that you guys care. And I think that would be a positive thing for the seniors. And it extends not only to physical violence, but also fraud. There's all sorts of scams that people try to take money away from seniors. They take advantage of seniors.
Okay, so taking us back to our own project that we're working on now at the Chinatown Library, our oral history of gentrification project, we were hoping to interview some of the seniors in the Chinatown community to shed a light on their history and their experiences living in Chinatown. And we were considering visiting their residences, like the SROs, and maybe taking photos, of course, with their consent, to help people better visualize like what it's actually like to be in these kinds of situations. We were curious about your thoughts on that.
I think it's something that's needed. You know, I earlier commented about how people need to work together to help each other. So whether it's the French working together to build a hospital or mm-hmm. new immigrants working together, like the CACA to work toward improved immigration policies or just pushing for opportunities for affordable housing and good food. I think that all of these require just developing an organization, or whether it's formal or informal, to establish a line of communication so that mm-hmm. we know what the other person is thinking and what the needs are. My encouragement is to have yourself be involved, but then also encourage others around you to be involved too. Yeah. We all have to be agents of change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's what we want to do. I'm glad that you all share this vision, you know, desire to help our home, to help our community. We all want people to have a better life. We're all here actually as a result of the migrations that our families have undertaken. You ask yourself, why did they undertake that? You know, it's because they were looking for a better life. We're all trying to find ways to improve our society and find peace in the world. I appreciate the opportunity.
What are some places that you recommend us to take pictures for our listeners to better visualize the circumstances that the seniors are facing right now?
I think it helps to really look at some of the housing conditions that people live in and to observe the relatively modest offerings that we have here. Sometimes the sidewalks are crowded and sometimes the buildings are not well maintained. You know, so I think one reason why we don't have a lot of grocery stores moving into this area is because, you know, for health licensing reasons, you want a good facility. And if the plumbing is poor and if the ceiling is cracked and roof is leaking, there are many problems with the physical condition of our buildings here. We have this big challenge. Our business and residential tenants can't pay a whole lot of rent. The owners of the property are not willing or are not able to make a lot of improvements. So how do we communicate with each other and get some of these improvements that are necessary? We have to just talk to each other and say, oh, well, what will it take to get this done? Or maybe there's a city program. And right now there is something available for some small businesses to improve their building, to make it more handicap accessible. It doesn't usually pay enough to, let's say, change out the whole plumbing system, but there's all sorts of programs that are available, but it requires really knowledge and understanding. We need some people to share that knowledge. So if you guys hear of something that's available, you know, share it.
Well, thank you so much for all of your advice and knowledge. As we start to wrap this episode up, we wanted to ask, like, since you're part of so many supportive organizations and do so much work, do you have any like resources that we can specifically, like maybe like websites we can visit to learn more?
Well, yeah, there are ways, but I can't recite them off the top of my head. But of course, you can go to the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California, chssc.org, or the Chinese American Museum, camla.org, or Chinese American Citizens Alliance. I don't think I have the number, the address for our local lodge. I brought some books to give to you guys and to share with your membership. You'll get an understanding of how a lot of people overcame obstacles in history and fought against restrictive laws, against discrimination, against racism, against sexism, all these things that have held people back over the years. One book is the Portraits of Pride. It has like 80 different stories. It talks about the role of Chinese in agriculture, in transportation, which included railroad construction, and other areas of work. I also have the Historical Society published about 15 years ago. And there are stories about the origin and the expansion and then the relocation of L.A. Chinatown. So there's a lot of good background on that. And there's some stories about famous people, you know, like James Hong, who is a film and television actor who's been around for a long time. He just recently got his handprints in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And also there's a little story about me and that. Cool. Growing up in L.A., because I have been really able to witness a lot of change in our communities when we were not wanted in other places. When our family moved from South L.A. in the area near Watts down to the Slauson and Van Ness area, which was formerly a white neighborhood, we got garbage on the lawn, eggs thrown at the house, people calling, making threatening phone calls. People, you know, my dad had a grocery store, and people would come in and they'd say, "Oh, you effing this," or "you stupid that." And it was just the attitudes that we have had to overcome to get to where we are now. Two books that we have published on these are photo books on Chinese.
Chinatown in Los Angeles is one of them.
Yeah, Chinatown in LA and Chinatown in China City.
In Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah, these are all LA. So these are images of old Chinatown versus the transition to the current new Chinatown. Now, you think of that Central Plaza where we have these very ornate and decorated buildings. But that was basically just a shopping center that was created. I have several other booklets that I'll share with you. Book about Chinese grocers. We have an issue called Voices of Chinatowns. It talks about people, whether it's in LA Chinatown or in the San Gabriel Valley Chinatowns. And then another issue on the 80th anniversary of Chinatown. Gumsan Journal is the annual publication of the Chinese Historical Society. So like in many other places around the world, a book called Roads Into and Out of Chinatown, written by Dr. Annie Hsu. She was the orthodontist for my son, but she grew up in San Francisco, Chinatown, growing up in modest circumstances. She was the first woman to graduate from the UC Dental School, and she ended up coming down here. Nobody would hire her, or nobody would partner with her as a dentist, so she opened her own practice. But a lot of these things that we kind of take for granted came about because people took risks. They overcame barriers.
So yes, if you are interested in learning more history about Chinatown, please reach out to the books that we mentioned earlier.
So before we like have our closing statements, I just wanted to ask you, of any like listeners who are interested in like helping Chinatown and like helping like the fight against like gentrification or unfair like practices, what do you think are like places to start, like entry level?
Couple of different ways. I mean, obviously you mentioned the CCED has been definitely forefront on the front lines of trying to achieve justice for people who have been displaced or under the threat of being displaced. You can also work with many individuals, some of us who have worked toward the new downtown Klan, where we're hoping that there would be recognition of the fact that this is a historic cultural community, and there are historic places and buildings and legacy businesses, some of which have been around for 80 five or more years. The Chinese American Citizens Alliance meets the Saturday of every month, offices at 415 Bamboo Lane at 3 p.m. on the first Saturday. The Chinese Historical Society has a heritage center on 411 Bernard Street. We're open every Sunday at 2:00. We have a library with resource materials. The CCDD, of course, has a need for many volunteers because there have been surveys and there have been efforts to support people getting information to people about COVID or other community needs. CACA has been around for 100 years and has been involved with more of the formal civil rights issues, but we do also have resource people that we can refer people to who are those who need help. But CACA is an all-volunteer organization, and we have a citizenship committee. We have board members who are involved in communicating with our legislators. We work on legislation that helps with immigration and other civil rights matters, voting rights. The Historical Society is really working on its archives and also just establishing a knowledge base that can be the foundation for any actions that are necessary. So, you know, you can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been and have an understanding of some of the challenges that people have faced in the past. So I am very much an advocate for the Chinese Historical Society and really helping with an understanding of our history.
I personally think that even if you don't have time to volunteer or like you don't like have a busy schedule, just knowing about a bit about the topic, you know, spreading the information, maybe like go visit the Chinatown American Museum, like all of these would be like great ways to help. But yeah, thank you, Eugene, for being with us today. We enjoyed your presence.
I'm pleased to be here, and I'm happy to share what I've learned. But then, you know, I always emphasize that I wasn't born with the knowledge or wasn't born with the experience or with the relationships. It really requires our constantly going out there and learning and sharing and never quitting.
I'm Caleb Leong.
I'm Xiaohao Fan.
I'm Zhangyang Wu.
And Malia Mahalina Janelkorn.
And we're signing out from the Teen Council Oral History Project. The Oral History Project is a teenager-led project based in LA's Chinatown, focused on raising awareness of the negative impacts of gentrification in the neighborhood